things get a little bit grim. But this is especially heinous.
Did you tell the police that she was murdered, May?
Nope.
Witchy ghost stuff.
Ah! That made me scared.
A spooky girl amateur hour.
Look at us, Jenny and I, a year and a half in, trying to actually figure out now that our mics move different ways.
It's tilt!
And we just thought it was like a back and forth motion.
Here I am turning my head like an idiot when my
stupid.
Mic
stupid.
My mic can do it for me.
Ah,
so dumb.
So dumb. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. I'm good.
How's your week?
Oh, it's been fine.
A good one.
Yeah, I didn't travel this week, which was nice.
We love that.
I go to Cleveland next week, and then I go to Michigan the week after that. But
Mrs. Midwest over here.
Yeah, it's just gonna be moving and shaking.
A who's who of the Midwest counties.
Yes. Yes, actually. Anything new in your world?
You know, not a whole lot. Just maintaining the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
We like a calm sea.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm just appreciating my calm sea while I have it.
Just kind of go with the flow.
I'm just chilling.
And we're not going to distrust it.
Nope. No. We're not going to be like, oh, there's a tidal wave behind that.
Right.
No, we're just enjoying the
calm.
Where
we're at.
Yeah.
Good.
Happy with what we have.
Good for you.
We love a gracious heart.
We love a gracious heart. Oh, my goodness. Well, welcome to A Little Bit Grim.
Hello. It's the podcast you found.
Yes, you did. That's Jenny over there.
Hi. That's Taylor.
Hi.
She's my best friend.
You're my best friend.
Thanks.
Oh, thank you. What a fun realization.
Thank you so much.
17 years
it
in.
It felt so genuine in my heart.
It was. Ew.
I can't. It was.
Ew.
Ew.
Yeah. Don't ever question our friendship again.
Speaking of our friendship, I had
what's up?
I've been back on Ian and I went out and had dinner and I was like feeling a little froggy, so I was like, I'm gonna have a cocktail. And you know what I had?
What?
Tequila and grapefruit juice.
Yeah, girl.
I am stuck on the Paloma train and now I think I'm on the grapefruit.
I knew you'd come around.
I know, I'm telling you. It's here. Aging before your very eyes.
Yes.
I'm like the portrait of Dorian Gray.
Is that what you are now?
Yeah.
You're aging because you like grapefruit juice?
Yeah, I feel like that's what it is.
That's
my AARP card will be coming in the mail shortly.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. How's that 401k doing?
Oh, it's great. 8% growth, I'm sure.
Doing super excellent.
I love it. So.
Oh my God. Welcome to Folklore Day.
Hi, we're here to tell you tales.
We are here to tell you tales.
We like a no fact episode every once in a blue moon.
Yeah, and this is definitely no facts.
Oh, mine is straight no facts.
Straight up no facts, which is great. We are just here to tell stories and to feel warm and fuzzy about it.
Well, here at A Little Bit Grim, there's nothing we love more than warm fuzzies.
That's true. Yeah, we probably don't give you very many of those.
No.
That's okay. We give ourselves warm and fuzzies when we record.
Just enjoy the sailboat when it's in calm seas.
Yeah. My story today is pretty warm and fuzzy.
Is it?
It's not grim. It's not grim at all.
Mine's a little gruesome.
Okay.
But I'm excited to hear. And you? Me. I? You.
Me?
You?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
Do we have any housekeeping? Probably not.
No.
Okay. Ready for this. I am going to be telling you the story of Paul Bunyan.
You are?
Yeah.
That made my heart flutter.
It's so cool. Okay. All right. So my sources were Mythology Unleashed on YouTube, a history.com article by Sarah Pruitt. During the 19th century, lumberjacks started telling tales around campfires of a man named Paul Bunyan. Paul Bunyan is said to have been born in Maine and was a huge giant of a man who did things out of the goodness of his heart. They mentioned his size, his strength, and his work ethic. The first known story published about Paul Bunyan was a story called The Round River Drive, written by James McGilvery, and was published in a newspaper in northern Michigan in 1906. Even as a baby, he was so big he needed 5 full-grown storks to deliver him to his parents.
Oh!
They had to milk two full-grown cows every morning and night in order to feed him.
Oh.
His mother had to feed him 10 barrels of porridge every 2 hours to keep his stomach from growling and knocking down the house.
He's like Clifford.
Yes. His first bed was a lumber wagon pulled by a team of horses. Of course, he had outgrown the house, so his parents were forced to put him on a raft out in the harbor. But when he moved in his sleep, he would cause huge waves that were responsible for sinking many ships.
Aww. How did his mom give birth to him?
She didn't. He came on storks.
Oh, okay, you're right. Sorry, I'm stupid.
Jeez.
Five storks.
Yes.
Okay.
Eventually, the Bunyans decided that it would be best to move out into the wilderness so Paul could grow and roam freely without disturbing anybody. Getting big Hercules vibes.
Okay.
Like the Disney cartoon Hercules where he's just so strong that he messes everything up. That's what I have.
Hercules? More like Hercules.
This is where he finds his love for the wilderness and the forests. Legend says that just one swing of his axe and he could clear 1 acre of the forest. One winter, it was so cold that the geese flew backwards and the spoken words froze solid before they could be heard.
Wow.
The snow even turned blue. Paul went for a walk in this crazy winter wonderland and he saw a creature in the woods. It was a baby blue ox. He took the little blue ox home with him and nursed him back to health. Although he never shed the blue hue of his coat, he did grow and became a healthy ox. Paul kept him and as his pet and named him Babe.
Babe.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so wholesome.
It's so wholesome.
Okay.
Babe wasn't the only creature that Paul adopted, but he was the most famous. All animals that Paul took under his wing ended up growing to huge proportions as well, and Babe was no exception. It is said that people who came across Babe would stare at him and they would actually see him growing right before their eyes.
Babe, he's like bamboo.
Yeah. Babe was so large that it took an hour for a murder of crows to fly from one horn to the other. Babe went through 30 bales of hay a day, a ton of grain, and would still be hungry for a snack later.
Wow.
When Paul stopped growing, he was 63 axe handles high. Which is about 189 feet tall, which is the same height as Cinderella's castle at Disney World.
Interesting. Jesus.
I'm telling you right now that I'm going to stop referencing things in terms of football fields, and I will only be referencing things in terms of the Disney World castle now.
Okay. I wish you wouldn't, but I'll accept it.
Duh. Paul left behind his homeland in Maine with Babe by his side, and a double-headed axe. He made his way to the Pacific Northwest and cut down trees for lumber as they went. They traveled with a band of other sidekicks as well. Johnny Inkslinger, who is said to have invented the very first ink pen by connecting a barrel of ink to a hose.
It sounds like he's like a softcore porn star.
Absolutely.
Was it Inkslayer?
Inkslinger.
Johnny Inkslinger.
Johnny Inkslinger. This was his bookkeeper.
Ah.
He had 7 axemen who were all named Elmer, who were charged with sharpening Paul's axes. They did this by chasing boulders down a hill and sharpening the axe, rolling them on the boulder as they went.
What?
Yeah. They also had a cook named Sourdough Sam. I love it. Paul's griddle was so large that 4 kids would strap ham to their feet and skate across it to keep it greased.
This is ridiculous.
I know. It took Sam plus 7 other men to flip pancakes for Paul.
Oh my gosh.
The kitchen was 10 square miles.
What's the price per square foot on that thing?
Oh my lord. According to the legends, the United States has mountains, rivers, and flatlands all because of Paul's adventures. In Minnesota, he left huge footprints that went on to become lakes. He cleared all of North and South Dakota of trees so that it could be used as farmland. He dug Lake Michigan as a waterhole for Babe. The Mississippi River is the result of a mishap. Babe was carrying water on his back when he slipped and it fell off. He dragged his axe across the ground in Arizona and created the Grand Canyon. Paul created the Yellowstone Falls so that he could shower. He made Pike's Peak so that he could look out and see all of his work.
Oh my god!
Isn't that cool?
A little origin story. Yeah.
he solved a log jam by straightening out the Wisconsin River by just pulling on it. The Great Teton Mountain Range was created when Paul and Babe were playing rough one afternoon.
My gosh.
There are some legends that tell of another ox named Bessie the Yeller Cow. Yes. She was massive as well, and she had very long yellow eyelashes that tickled the lumberjack standing on the other end of the camp.
Oh.
She produced all the dairy for the men in their travels. Sadly, Babe passed away, and Paul had to bury him. The mound he is buried under is the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Oh my gosh!
There aren't many stories about what happened to Paul, but it is believed that once the area in the Pacific Northwest got too populated, he went up to Alaska. Now we see flashes of his axe when he swings, and we call it the Aurora Borealis.
This is so cute.
I was really pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, this is the nicest story we've ever told.
I know. So the way I like plan out what I'm going to do, I write them all down in my planner, yeah, and I search for a bunch of like folklore at a time, and I just kind of map it out.
Mm-hmm.
And this was on when I did the Tooth Fairy.
Oh.
And I started reading it, and it was just like kind of about the first article that was written about Paul Bunyan, and it was just seemed kind of boring. So I switched gears and did Tooth Fairy instead. And then I was like, no, I already started my research on Paul Bunyan. I'll finish it. And when I actually got past like the first two or three paragraphs, I was like, this is so cute.
It is super cute. I love it. This is fun.
Yeah. Okay. Shockingly, some historians believe that while this tale is truly a folklore legend, it could have been based on a real person.
What?
Gosh, okay, this is a French name, so sorry. Fabien Fournet,
okay,
a French-Canadian lumberjack who moved south and got a job as a foreman on a logging crew in Michigan after the Civil War. He was fairly tall for the time period. He was about 6 foot when the average was about 5'5".
Okay.
Fabien got the nickname Saginaw Joe, because nobody could pronounce his name, I guess. Okay. he was rumored to have two complete sets of teeth, and when he used to bite off hunks of wooden rails in his spare time, enjoyed drinking and brawling.
Ian had two sets of baby teeth.
What?
Yes! He had two sets. He lost his teeth twice before his, like, permanent teeth came in.
That is so bizarre.
I know. Isn't that weird?
Is anyway. He Fabien?
Maybe. I'll ask
Reincarnated?
Him. I'll ask him when I get home.
Okay. He was rumored to have two sets of complete teeth, blah, blah, blah. Okay, one night, one November 9, 1875, he was murdered in a notoriously rowdy lumber town in Bay City, Michigan. Honestly.
And enough dentists in this town for the two of us.
Right. His death and the sensational trial of his alleged killer, who was acquitted, fueled tales of Saginaw Joe's rough and tumble life and his lumbering prowess in the logging camps of Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and beyond. Other than his size, this doesn't sound too much like Paul Bunyan to me, who just wanted to live peacefully with his ox, but anyway. Over time, Saginaw Joe's tale seemed to merge with another French-Canadian lumberjack named Bon Jean.
Good John.
Yeah. The French pronunciation of Jean's full name is believed to have evolved into Bunyan.
Aha!
Right. In 1912, McGilvery's collaborated with a poet on a Bunyan-themed poem for the American Lumberman magazine, earning Paul Bunyan...
Is that a magazine?
I think it must have been.
I would like to subscribe.
Earning Paul Bunyan his first national exposure.
Wow.
After 2 years, an ad campaign for Minnesota's Red River Lumber Company featured the first illustrations of the larger-than-life lumberjack. Combined with pamphlets spinning the tales of his exploits, his prominent appearance as Red River's mascot would help turn Paul Bunyan into a household name and an enduring American icon.
Wow.
The pamphlets influenced Esther Shepherd, who wrote of the mythic hero in her book titled Paul Bunyan in 1924. James Stevens, also a lumber publicist, mixed tradition and invention in his version of the story, told in his book titled Paul Bunyan in 1925. These books restyled Paul's image for a wide popular audience. Their humor centered on Paul's giganticness rather than the knowledge of lumbering techniques. The Bunyan legend was further popularized by numerous children's books. Today, there is an amusement park called Paul Bunyan Land in Minnesota. And now I have a poem for you.
Yes!
It is called Paul Bunyan, and it is by Shel Silverstein.
Oh!
All right. He rode through the woods on a big blue ox. He had fists as hard as chopping blocks. 500 pounds and 9 feet tall, that's Paul. Talk about working when he swung his axe, and you could hear it ring for a mile and a half. Then he'd yell, timber, and down she'd fall for Paul. Talk about drinking, that man so mean that he'd never drink nothing but kerosene. And a 5-gallon can is a little bit small, even for Paul. Talk about rough, well, he had once a fight with a thunderstorm on a cold, dark night. I ain't saying who won, but it don't storm at all around here, thanks to Paul. He was 90 years old when he said with a sigh, I think I'm going to lay right down here and die, because sunshine and sorrow, I've seen it all, says Paul. He says, there ain't no man alive can kill me, ain't no woman around can thrill me, and I think heaven just might be a ball, says Paul. So he died, and we cried. It took 18 men just to bust the ground. It took 24 more just to lower him down. And we covered him up, and we figured that was all for Paul. But late one night, the tree started shaking, the dog started howling, and the earth started quaking. And out with the ground, with a hi, y'all, comes Paul. He shook the dirt off his clothes, he scratched his butt and wiped his nose. Y'all been dead wasn't no fun at all. He says, up in heaven, they got harps on their knees, they got clouds and wings, but they ain't got no trees. I don't think that that's much of heaven at all, says Paul. So he jumps on his ox with a fare thee well. He says, I'll find out if there's trees in hell. And rode away, and that was all we ever seen of Paul. But the next time you hear timber yell, that sounds like coming from the pits of hell, when a weird and devilish ghostly wail, like somebody's chopping on the devil's tail, then a shout, a call, a crash, a fall. It ain't no mortal man at all. That's Paul.
Oh, cute.
The end.
I love Shel Silverstein.
I do too. So a little fun, lighthearted that folklore
was
for
so
us today.
Good. I loved it.
I was really excited about it.
It's really cute. And it has a lot of weird parallels.
Really?
To mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But mine is Slavic.
Oh.
And she's hold on. I'll just tell you all about her here in a moment. Okay. Wikipedia, Britannica, and the majority of this is from vice.com.
Really?
Who did a wonderful almost exposé.
Oh my gosh.
Off of this character.
Cool.
From Slavic folklore, who is somebody that I kind of like personally identify with.
All right.
As she is an ancient swamp witch who lives in a hut that stands on giant chicken legs that slowly turns like a rotisserie.
What?
Surrounded by giant pine trees and glowing skulls.
Okay.
Okay. She is a ferocious and often deformed toad-like creature.
What?
But unlike me or Paul, she cannibalizes people who seek her out for her help.
Oh. I'm getting the... Shit, what's the witch in the woods that eats the kids?
Baba Yaga? That's what I'm doing.
Oh, I was thinking like Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Very Hansel and Gretel All type right. witch.
Excellent.
Deep in the wood. She also loves devouring souls of the recently departed. Originating in Slavic folklore, Baba Yaga is widely defined as an ogress who steals, cooks, and eats her victims, usually children. She is a guardian of the fountains of the water of life, and she lives with two or three sisters who are all known as Baba Yaga.
Oh.
Baba Yaga can ride through the air, flying in either an iron tea kettle or a mortar and pestle, and she uses the pestle as like an oar to like row herself through the sky.
I am here for this this imagery. Those are very heavy objects to be flying.
Those are very heavy objects.
Okay.
Cool. And as she flies through the sky on her tea kettle or mortar and pestle, she creates thunderstorms wherever she goes.
Very cool.
Yeah. She often accompanies Death on his travels, where she finds her Souls of the Dead Snickety Snacks. Across folklore and within single tales, Baba Yaga shifts between a maternal helper and a cannibalistic villain. She's well known as a frightening witch, but Baba Yaga is also an ancient and complex manifestation of origin myths and cultural anxieties. Many tales feature three Baba Yagas depicted as sisters. An example of this is in a 19th century version of The Maiden Tsar by Alexander Afanasieff. And it tells the story of Ivan, the handsome son of a merchant, makes his way to the home of one of the three Baba Yagas. So he journeyed onward, straight ahead, and finally came to a little hut. It stood in the open field, turning on chicken legs. He entered and found Baba Yaga, the bony-legged. "Fee, fee," she said. "The Russian smell was never heard of nor caught sight of here, but it has come by itself. Are you here of your own free will or by compulsion, my good boy?" "Largely of my own free will and twice as much by compulsion. Do you know, Baba Yaga, where lies the thrice 10th kingdom?" "No, I do not," she said, and told him to go to her second sister. She might know. Ivan walks for some time before encountering a small hut identical to the first. This Baba Yaga makes the same comments and asks the same question as the first, and Ivan asks the same question. The second Baba Yaga does not know either and directs him to the third, but says that if she gets angry with him and wants to devour him, take ye three horns from her and ask her permission to blow them. Blow the first one softly, the second one louder, and the third louder still. Ivan thanks her and continues on his journey. After walking for some time, Ivan eventually finds the chicken-legged hut of the youngest of the three sisters turning in an open field. This third and youngest of the Baba Yagas makes the same comment about the Russian smell before running to wet her teeth and consume Ivan.
Oh.
Ivan begs her to give him three horns, and she does so. The first he blows softly, the second louder, and the third louder yet. This causes birds of all sorts to arrive and swarm the hut. One of the birds, the firebird, tells Ivan to hop on his back or Baba Yaga will eat him. Ivan does so, and the Baba Yaga rushes him and grabs the firebird by the tail. The firebird leaves with Ivan, leaving Baba Yaga behind with a fistful of firebird feathers.
Okay.
Which, I mean, I guess Russian fairy tales are different.
Yeah.
than our fairy tales. In the tale of Vasilisa the Beautiful, arguably the most famous story in which Baba Yaga appears, Baba Yaga takes on several seemingly conflicting roles. Beautiful Vasilisa. I'm not going to make it through.
I believe in you.
Vasilisa lives
good
with
old Val.
Good old Val. lives with her wicked stepmother and two homely stepsisters who all conspire to have her killed. It's very Cinderella.
Yeah.
After several unsuccessful attempts, they finally send Val directly to Baba Yaga's hut, knowing that the crone eats humans as one eats chickens. But gross, right? Yikes. But instead of devouring the girl, Baba Yaga forces her to do a series of seemingly impossible menial tasks, such as separating grains of rice from wheat kernels before dawn. When Val succeeds at this, she's granted one of the skull lanterns that rings Baba Yaga's house. Upon returning home, the lantern immediately engulfs her horrible family in flames, freeing her from their tyranny. Eventually, the beautiful Val ends up marrying the Tsar. So super, super Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Here, Baba acts as trickster, villain, and savior, ultimately helping Val to rid her of her stepfamily through some, like, pretty vile and unconventional means.
Yikes.
And she's unlike the traditional godmother figure. Baba Yaga is outside the bounds of morality, and her aid often comes in menacing forms. Her ambiguousness, according to folklorist, I know, Joanna Hubbs, which I want to be a folklorist.
There's a lot of things we want to be.
I know, not enough time. is directly connected to her femininity and her femininity to the natural world. As Andreas Johns, the author of a whole mess of seminal books about the crone, discusses Baba Yaga as an aspect of a great mother goddess whose dual nature as an old woman and cannibal witch reflects a fundamental paradox of nature. And in some ways in her folklore, she represents Mother Earth.
Oh, cool.
Isn't that weird? The tale of Prince Danila Govorila encapsulates this duality well. In this one, a princess named Katarina befriends Baba's daughter, who she finds in Baba's hut after fleeing her brother who was trying to bang her. The two eventually escape the evil crone, who repeatedly tries to slam Katarina in her scorching oven. As Katarina and her new companion flee, they toss behind them a comb, a brush, and a hand towel in an attempt to slow Baba Yaga down. The comb transforms into a mountain range, the brush into a dense forest, and the towel into a vast lake. So it's like creationism.
Yeah.
Like Paul Bunyan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how we got all our things.
Right. In this story, that's like a really common theme for Baba Yaga. It's one of the, the story is a really common theme for Baba Yaga. It's one that the renowned and controversial folklorist Vladimir Propp saw, according to Levchin, as an echo of the ancient myth of the giver of fire, like Prometheus, whose flight from the abode of the gods, from her chicken house, becomes an act of creation of our own world, rising up mountains and forests, laying down rivers and seas. In the myriad of representations of her, she is generally unsettling to look at. And that's the only thing that's constant.
Okay.
Throughout all of them is that she's a little haggard. usually just said to have a long nose and teeth made out of iron.
Oh.
And she is constantly toot-totting around and...
We've got to have those iron teeth for those bone crunches.
Well, how else are you going to chew through a bone, honestly? She's constantly, like, toot-totting around in her little mortar and pestle, yet different contexts exacerbate or highlight different qualities and phenomena associated with her. In some accounts, she is a manifestation of winter and storms.
Oh.
And in others, she's a Slavic version of a goddess akin to Persephone.
Oh, okay.
She is... on all fronts.
That is quite the range.
She's got a spread to her. Baba's complexities and contradictions make her unique among folk figures, as most folktale characters in European traditions behave in predictably unambiguous way in relation to the hero or the heroine they either help or hinder. Two very important roles are those of the villain who harms the protagonist or the donor who's helpful and gives the hero or heroine a magic agent. Baba Yaga somehow does both, sometimes within the same story. And the inconsistencies in her story are so striking because she exists within a genre that typically fights against paradoxes and in its form and content. And so it's really rare in folklore from this tradition to see such like a mercurial character.
Mm-hmm. I was just looking up your pictures.
A Baba Yaga?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's pretty gnarly looking.
Yeah. A little frightening.
Yeah, she's a little oogie spook.
Very, very witch from the Snow White tale.
Yes. Yeah.
Like the creepy old witch, like with the apple like
old crone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, despite her questionable methods of problem solving and stealing children away for snickety snacks, I still say that Baba Yaga is kind of living my dream as an old haggard woman who lives alone in the woods and terrifies the townspeople. And just flies in a little mortar pestle rowboat.
Your dreams.
I love her.
I do too. What a cool story.
It is. Well, and it's cool. I like Paul Bunyan too.
Yeah.
I'm really going to be interested. I wonder if there's like books, like children's books.
Oh, there are.
Theo.
I'm sure there are. There are many children's like things to do with Paul Bunyan. But Baba Yaga's pretty cool.
She's pretty cool. Her hut is ridiculous looking. Did you see a picture of her house?
No.
Google her house. It's, and this will be on the Instagram. If you don't follow us on the Instagram, go follow us on the Instagram so you can see her chicken leg house.
What? What in the heck? It's like if the burrow sprouted heckin' chicken legs.
Yes. It's wow. So funny.
That's awesome.
And it just turns around in a circle.
Yeah. Getting roasted.
Getting roasted like a rotisserie.
That's so cool.
It's just a cool... And she is so... She's like the Russian, Ukrainian, Slavic witch version of Paul Bunyan. Like, her folklore... There's 1,010 stories about Baba Yaga.
What created their...
landscape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
It's neat.
I love the way that folklore helps people describe like why things are the way they are.
Yes.
Especially when it comes to the land, because
they have no other explanation.
People were like, I don't know why this giant hole in the ground is here.
Right.
Let's
make it up. Paul Bunyan. She very much reminds me of the Morrigan from like Knights of Camelot.
Yeah.
Where she's like politically involved mm-hmm. with the things of the time, is like SARS, and people would come to her and seek out the stories of like the heroes that get like passed down. It's just cool. I don't know.
But she's gonna eat you.
But she's gonna eat you. Or sometimes she might help you. And there's no telling which is which.
Toss up. You just don't know with her. Hopefully she's in a good mood.
She's a Gemini for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, I feel like Paul Bunyan is a Taurus.
Yeah.
And I feel like we need to arbitrarily assign more zodiac signs. To folklore characters.
I agree. I think that's a good way to move forward.
We should do that.
Yeah. Let's do it.
We'll post it on the... Join the Facebook group.
Yeah, join the Facebook group. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Do you have a bright and shiny for today?
My bright and shiny is going to be that before I came over to record this episode... the small human and I were outside. Oh my gosh, he lost his front tooth a couple days ago. He looks so stinking cute.
Oh my gosh, teddy bear.
He looks like such a little goonie. He's so sweet. But we were playing with him, Bubbles, outside, and it just like brought my heart a lot. It was a moment of calm delight.
Sweet. So cute. Did the tooth fairy come for him?
The tooth fairy came for him. The tooth fairy did not have any change.
Uh-huh.
And the smallest bill that she had was a $5. So he got $5.
What? For his first one?
For his heckin'. I mean, it's not his first tooth. It's his front tooth.
Okay. All right.
So.
He just hit gold.
He hit gold. He, Tooth Fairy had to run to the bank and she didn't do that day. So.
Got it.
Yeah.
Duh.
I was tickling him on the couch.
Uh-huh.
And he laughed so hard and it just flew out of his mouth.
Oh, that's the way to do it.
I know.
Did he ever, like, freak out about his other teeth getting pulled out?
No, he's never had. He won't pull them out. He leaves his teeth in there until they
fall out.
Yeah. And I was giving him, like, apples and stuff all week to try to, like, get it to come out on an apple, because he won't let you pull it. He will have none of that.
Oh, bub.
I know.
Well, at least it came out.
It came out. So,
oh, gosh.
He's goofy looking now.
Sweet boy.
Little first grade. Honey, the one tooth wonder, like happy.
Oh, cute.
What's your bright and shiny?
We've had a really, really good podcast week. We got so much done. We went and had breakfast and had like a breakfast meeting.
Business meeting.
We had a lovely human share our podcast on Reddit, and a lot of people have joined the fam since then.
If you found us on Reddit, hi.
Yeah, let us know.
Let us know what you think. Send us a message.
Yeah, so I know that this might be out of the timeline order. We're not sure where this episode's gonna pop up, but in our current timeline, that's what's
happening.
A big deal for us right now. So that's my bright and shiny, just like really exciting podcast stuff happening.
I'm excited that like our weird fever dream has like turned into a thing that other people enjoy.
I know.
It's so weird.
It's wild. But it is. It's so fun.
And we love y'all.
Yeah, we
do. So much.
So
we have like amassed the coolest collection of weirdos.
Yes.
Across the internet.
Absolutely. So stop by, say hi, join the Facebook group, follow us on Instagram, Twitter. You can send us your own spooky paranormal.
Please do.
True crime, disaster, cult stories to alittlebitgrim@gmail.com. And you could put in a email, like a form email on the website.
alittlebitgrim.com.
And if you want to leave us a review, that's super, super helpful for us, and we would love it very much.
But don't feel like you have to.
Yeah. just if you're called, if your heart calls you to do that.
If you hear the wolf cry to the blue corn moon.
Yeah. Oh God.
Do that then.
Do that. And have a great Friday.
Be kind to yourself.
And to others.
Goodbye.